7654321.
Hey guys, this is Liz Cambay.
This is Nikki Collin.
What up, guys? It's Edward Stark.
Hey, this is Imani Lee Stafford.
Hey, this is Jordan Canada.
This is Asia Wilson.
Welcome to the WNBA Nation.
Welcome back, WNBA Nation. Kyle Haywood here, and I am joined by my good friend Steve Schwartzman. How's it going, dude?
I'm great. Squid Game reference. Now the show's relevant. Let's do it. You know that hip show where there's the squids and they play? I don't know anything about Squid
Game. Yeah, the squids are playing games.
Yeah. It's apparently a lot more distressing than what I described. It's the creepy show. But
Steve, it's good to be back on the mic with you, dude.
It has. It's actually been, I swear it's been almost 2 months since I've actually gotten on anything. Because it's close to it. Because it's finals time. Mm-hmm. And then just, we obviously took a bit of a break. And then we had to have another break because, obviously, with you and your family in sickness. And Logan needing to find places to refuge because of that. And some busy work and school stuff with Jason and I. You know, this post-WNBA season point in the year toward the end of the calendar year is always a difficult time for us to get things resituated. But I think we're finally in a place where we can start seeing some consistency. We're not going to make any promises because that would just jinx us. But I think we're going to be in a place where we're going to start seeing more regular content. We're going to get back to the stream as is. And we're stoked for that. And just as this NCAA season is heating up in a very fast way, you're going to need to cool off, have a Gatorade, and isn't that the best transition ever?
Speaking of Gatorade.
Oh! Hey, who said that?
Hold up. It sounds like we're professional podcasters.
With
those types of transitions. Wow. Those types of transitions and the amount of just expertise that we show on a regular basis.
Real talk, Steve, right now. We should start a podcast.
We should start a podcast.
Let me just like hang out and talk about stuff.
Yeah. We should do that.
Just funny.
Gatorade has signed their very first NCAA student athlete, officially signing Paige Beckers to an NIL contract where she will be working with them. And I'm excited. I'm excited that the first student athlete to sign with Gatorade is a women's basketball player.
Yeah.
Like, that's so huge.
This is
like,
the
they
first
could have signed men's basketball
at any level, which is awesome. Yeah. It's very exciting.
It could have easily been, you know, a men's basketball, could have been a football player, you know, anything like that. And yet here she is, you know, it's Paige Becker signing the NIL deal with Gatorade, which is pretty sweet. I don't know the details as far as like money and whatnot. However, from what her statement, I'll just go ahead and read a quick little portion of the statement that she gave. She says, it was a blessing to win Gatorade Player of the Year in high school. And now it's truly surreal to be an official member of the Gatorade family. I know this is just the beginning of our partnership, and I can't wait to get to work with Gatorade to drive impact in the community and on the women's game, which makes me just really, really excited to hear that not only are they signing with her, but that a big portion of this is going to go toward pushing the women's game and furthering women's basketball across the board. So that just got me really excited. Steve, what were your initial gut reactions when you saw this news come across?
Maybe
Twitter or whatever
it
was.
Honest, realistic first response, if I'm being 100% honest, is where does one buy a Gatorade Letterman jacket? Because that thing was fresh.
So fresh.
Extremely fresh. As far as its overall impact, I mean, it is huge. Paige, for one thing, and there are definitely a lot of people that are going to have opinions on specifically Paige getting the spotlight, and let's hope that this love spreads and isn't just kind of a one-shot deal to the recognizable stars of current times. And I totally get that, because I've had a lot of people call out, like, where's Leah Boston's opportunity? Well, you know,
right.
And that is valid of a discussion. I will say that Paige, as an example, should be a positive ground break, because knowing that the WNBA salary structure is going to be a gradual improvement, it's not something that where it's set right now, it can peak just at a point. You're right. Now looking at a player in Paige Beckers that will potentially be pulling in $1 million before she ever touches a WNBA jersey. And
yeah,
normally I'm not big on, money is metrics, but that's a big deal for an NIL. And I think it will not be the necessary stop to that investment. I think you're going to see that with a strong handful of players. And my hope is that we see an example of how easily you can invest to bridge the gap as far as that side of the world works in salaries and whatnot. So I think that that's a huge message right off the bat. I think the other piece to it, it's really going to be intriguing how this, I guess, this necessary NIL structure works out, because it's that idea of, I don't know if any of us really fully yet know what this all means.
Right.
What are these people? Is it just advertising type of stuff, like promotional sponsorship? Is it, you know, what exactly is that going to entail for someone like Paige? But I think one big idea there is you are now going to be able to put faces of women's basketball well in. I mean, you know, Gatorade is an organization that's very, very aggressively dedicated into supporting young players, youth basketball. And for her to be the first face of that means you're going to see those faces. You're going to inspire young people to play the game. And because of that, I think it, like I said before, it can't be overstated. We need to see, honestly, some more black players as faces of that. So my hope is that we don't wait another year before the next best player in college, women's college basketball, is given this opportunity. I'm hoping we're close to someone else, whether it's Leah Boston, whether it's Azzi Fudd, like whoever it is, because I think that that's an important piece to it. Just my opinion, but
yeah,
overall it's exciting. It's very cool. It's very cool to hear a name like that. The level of companies that we've seen do this NIL thing have just been hysterical. I mean, everything from Gatorade to AT&T to, like, you know,
local Jimmy's, taco places.
Yeah, like yeah. Jimmy's Turnip Hut, you know, in Cincinnati, yeah. Or whatever. You know, like all kinds of different organizations, groups. And so all these tech and crypto companies. I still don't know what crypto is. I kind of don't want to know. And so it's been an interesting case for it. But I'm intrigued at the prospect of it. I would hope that it speaks to a larger value and a larger scale down the road. And I hope it's something that the WNBA as an organization is paying attention to, and that I think you have a hand to be a little more aggressive in pushing for bridging this gap that's needed bridging for quite a while.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that. And that's where I think Paige makes a lot of sense. She's a big, huge name. She's marketed everywhere. And I understand that some people actually turn that negatively. Paige has done nothing but promote, like, and do a great job representing what everybody wants her to represent when she's put on the spot, when she's, you know, in front of a microphone. She says the right things. She promotes the right things. And so, I'm excited for what it means for Paige to get this opportunity, but also that, yeah, as you said, I hope that this opens up a lot of opportunities for a lot of different players across the board. I think that your comments on it making an impact on potentially helping with players not having to go overseas as frequently.
No, huge. I was about to make that same point. It's like Paige Beckers may never have to play for UMMC, may never have to go overseas. Can have a very
to play for Dynamo Kursk or yeah, like. Yeah. Like she may not have to do that. And I hope that she's just step one, because where the WNBA may not be able to afford it quite yet, they might not be able to quite get the salaries to where they need to be to keep players home. Maybe these types of opportunities, these sponsorship deals that can start in college can help out with that, can provide, because, you know, these players enter into the WNBA unable to have made any money prior to this year. Everybody coming in, into the W, this was it. This was what you're making. And you're starting out, you know, at the $50,000 range. And in a lot of areas of the world, or excuse me, of the country, that's just not really going to cut it. That's tough. And so then you got to add a lot more on the sponsorships. And I think that seeing, you know, Gatorade, step into the space, and as well as so many others into the college space, mm-hmm. I'm hoping that that continues forward into the, and grows the women's game to where we're seeing more and more sponsorship opportunities in the WNBA.
My hope is that a lot of coaches aren't Dabo Sweeney-ing this and are being supportive of this, because supporting this actually is going to grow the women's game so much more. Because if we start to regularly see top level players, they may not all get the Gatorade contract, but a lot of them are going to have a cocktail of contracts, of NIL contracts, that are going to add up to a good amount of revenue. If we regularly see these top level players, these elite level players, pulling in a six-figure income, what you're going to see is players who regularly can play a traditional schedule. What that means is you can afford to expand the schedule, and you can afford to promote that expanded schedule and an expanded playoffs. That opens you room to more easily expand the league as far as rosters and team number. So if you want to go from 12 to 16, like, you have that ability much easier when you're able to make this happen, because you're just able to invest in bodies and health a lot more effectively with this in tow. And it's insane because when you look at what Paige is pulling in and you look down those names, you know, look, what's Taurasi pulling in if this was an opportunity for her? What's Stewie pulling in? Elena Deladon pulling in? Asia Wilson just got a hero's welcome in South Carolina at a recent football game. Not, you know, you do your typical, here's an alumni, they wave, everyone claps. Yeah,
Maya Moore.
She was given like a gladiator-esque roar from the crowd. She's a goddess unto a being on that campus. What was Asia Wilson going to get from NIL contracts in the state of South Carolina alone? And it's that idea of, like, those are players, and a lot of that, it's funny because I brought up a bunch of players that don't play overseas, but, like, those are a lot of players that if they never had the worry of having to go overseas, worry about that offseason piece, could we have made this investment? Could we have made these changes a lot sooner, potentially? Yeah. Because I think that when I first heard this NIL situation rolling out, one big thought that I had was this is going to impact the women's game at a professional level in a much bigger way than people are realizing. It goes well beyond money. And it really goes beyond, like, what these people are going to be able to promote in their day-to-day. And I'm a huge fan of that. On top of that, if in the off-season, you're able to have traditional off-season experiences as opposed to having to go play somewhere else to play for a second team, Paige Beckers launches her own academy. You know, like, these types of players down the road, when they hit a certain level of super-duper stardom, can open camps and put a higher investment into these programs. I mean, you look at some great WNBA players who supported the Mamba Academy in its time and were there to coach with Kobe Bryant and with that team and with those organizations. Now you may be able to see players who can just do it themselves and streamline the process of helping build accelerated programs for young girls in sports, not just in basketball. And so it'll be intriguing to see where it all lines up.
Absolutely. Speaking of NCAA women's ball, we've got some big games coming up. Before we take a look back at some prior results, I want to talk about what's going to be happening as we're recording this tomorrow, but as you are listening to this today, Thursday, December 2nd is potentially the biggest non-conference day of basketball for this season. So I'm really excited to kind of just look at, and we get it primarily because of a conference challenge, basically. So this is a, there's a few teams have already had, like, you know, a couple of chances against top 25 teams. Stanford, BYU, Oregon State have all played against multiple top 25 teams. And that's been, you know, from some of these big tournaments that have been going on. However, we have the Big Ten ACC Challenge and the Big 12 SEC Challenge that that are coming this week. And I'm really, really excited, especially for the Thursday games that are coming up, the December 2nd games. Mm-hmm. Let me just run through these really quick, Steve, before we break any of them down. The first matchup of the day, I believe, starts at 4 p.m. Eastern time, number 15 Texas at number 17 Texas A&M. Not only a in-state rivalry, but a matchup of two, you know, top 20 teams. Texas A&M is 7-0 currently right now. And Texas has had a couple of big wins, especially against teams like Stanford. So that's a big game coming up. A couple other games, at 7 p.m. Eastern time. We've got number 2 NC State at number 6 Indiana, as well as number 12 Michigan at number 10 Louisville. And then rounding out that night, as far as, big names happening in this, in some of these, challenges, we've got number 9 Iowa at Duke starting at 9 p.m. Eastern, and number 14 Iowa State at LSU, with Kim Mulkey, being there, at LSU. It's weird to see her, with LSU as opposed to Baylor. That's been kind of a weird adjustment for me this season. Steve, of those five games in particular, what one do you think is the number one must watch?
The number one must watch. Golly.
Yeah. If you had to pick one, I know it's tough.
Yeah. I mean, by numbers alone, NC State Indiana is going to be pretty bonkers, especially because those are two styles of play that have really shown to complement each other really well. Indiana really took Stanford to the brink and could nearly be coming in, could very nearly be coming into this one undefeated. NC State, unfortunately, had to play the juggernaut in game one and otherwise have just been comfortably cruising, including against Maryland, which at the time was a two spot. You know, they pretty much stole the two spot from Maryland. So it's really, that's one that I think is exciting in that it's just two teams that have shown a lot of momentum. I think in terms of atmosphere, UT and A&M is probably going to be one of the more exciting matchups. Because you just explained, it's an in-state rivalry, and now technically it's a conference rivalry again. You know, you're opening up just a whole bevy of exciting match, you know, exciting potential for that matchup. So those definitely stood out to me in the loudest way. But you know, I think another unspoken one on Sunday, it may not be the one you'd listed, but you might have, I'm not sure if I caught all the five correctly. You've got a UConn Notre Dame matchup on Sunday. UConn's just getting all their awesome matchups, all the traditional exciting matchups just out of the way. Just like, let's just get through these quickly. But you know, that's one that you're looking at a top team versus a 24 seed. But at the same time, that's two teams that always seem to bring the best out of each other. I mean, all weekend's full of great things. But if I had to pick one, I mean, maybe it's a cheap answer. NC State Indiana is going to be a very fun matchup. And
if
Indiana finds that upset, you're suddenly talking about, do they squeak their way as far as the top four? With that win, and that's pretty cool opportunities. Also, I've got to give this is a weird one, but Oregon and the Portland Pilots, West Coast champs against Oregon. Who knows? I do have another favorite. I have another favorite matchup looming, but we can wait until later to talk about it.
A big one for those Thursday matchups for me is the Iowa Duke. I think a lot of people might not recognize this one right off. First of all, we haven't heard about Iowa for a little while because of they've had a lot of COVID come through their program. They haven't played in like 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's been a while. They're only 4-0. They've had to cancel a bunch of games. And then, but I think having an opportunity for them to go up against Duke in their first return game could be, you know, a pretty formidable opponent. Duke is 6-0. They're not ranked top 25 because they haven't played anyone. They're 6-0, but they haven't played like a soul. So this provides Duke an opportunity to say, hey, we're going against a top 10 team. And it's an opportunity for them to say, hey, we're going against a top 10 team that might be rusty and coming off of, you know, kind of a big break. This could be a huge opportunity for Duke to knock off, a big team in Iowa with, you know, a big time player like Caitlin Clark.
In defense of Duke, beating a 6-2 Alabama team, I think, is enough with this resume to at least squeak the 25th seed. Or the 25 spot at this point.
25 spot.
Maybe not farther than that, but yeah, like this should be a top 25 matchup. Like the fact that Duke is just out of the running shouldn't give you, like, shy away from the fact that this is essentially a top 25 matchup. Duke is this Iowa game, because Duke goes Iowa, then they get a respite against Penn, and then they've got South Carolina. So outside of those two matchups, yeah. I still think they're in the running. Give them about 5 games. You'll see them in the top 24 pretty comfortably. Notre Dame might squash that, actually.
I think I think this could be good for Duke. Even if this is just like a 3 or 4 point game, could actually look good for Duke. If they're up late.
Yeah.
And Iowa comes back to beat them, like that could honestly do enough to push Duke forward in the votes. You know, there's still, I don't know, I think there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So they're technically, if you continue the ratings down, they're down at 31.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that they really could have an opportunity to do a little bit more, do a little bit more damage here, as you were saying. I think they're a better team than they've shown so far, or that they've even had an opportunity to show so far. So I'm excited about that one. I think that one's going to be a bigger game than some people may give it credit for. I'd love to see Kara Lawson on the sidelines against, you know, a player like Caitlin Clark, and it'd be good.
Yeah, and seeing how Iowa bounces out of this, because they jump right into a pretty rough test. They've got Duke, they've got the Spartans, then they've got number 14 Iowa State. It's going to be an interesting road for them, because if they manage to take those two games home, then they face Iowa State, ranked ahead of Iowa State, and I'm sure that they would have something to say about that. So next week is going to be a lot of fun if those two teams maintain their momentum. Granted, if Iowa maintains their momentum, it means they're not playing, so I'm incorrect when I say what I just said. But yeah, I just think these are January-type matchups, or maybe late December matchups, that you're seeing as far as, like, granted, these teams aren't all in the same conference and whatnot, but we're seeing very, very heated matchups very early in the season, and it's very, very cool thing.
Yeah, I agree. I'm excited to see. It's been a good season so far. I know before. I know you've got a little segment that I want to make sure that we hit. I'm assuming based on what.
Well, not
what,
even a segment. Some of the games you were saying. I got one shout out. That we gotta hit, because we always, I think you and I enjoy some deep dives into the roster or into the schedule. Yeah. What can we find? And often that's finding like two Division II teams or something like that. Sometimes you see a name that you're like, what do I got to do to find that one on television? Because this one's not currently listed anywhere that I can find. Maybe online on a streaming service we'll see something like that. But man, you got 7-1, Stephen A. Austin. They're rolling pretty well. They're, getting their footing. They took Texas A&M to the brink. They only lost by 7. Otherwise, they've looked pretty consistent. But how are they going to withstand the challenge of the Saints of Our Lady of the Lake University? One of my absolute favorite institutional names ever. I have
Our Lady of the Lake.
I forgot about them, you know, because I lived in Texas for a while. This is the 4th, so that would be
Saturday.
So right. You know, if you're watching Baylor Mizzou and need a bit of a, you know, go to, like, most likely Stephen A. Austin, you know, Stephen F. Austin's website, or you know, who knows, OLLU might have something, and see if you can find a stream. And cheer on those Saints you know, unless you are a Lady Jacks fan, whatever you want to do there. But that's my small school call out of the week is let's see. And if you're you're a Saints fan, you know, if you're an all you Saints fan or a player or a coach or whatever, if you're just the account on Twitter, you're getting a shout out. Show us who's showing up for that big matchup against the Lady Jacks. We know you can pull it off. It's been a dominant year. I believe they've only won 2 games. So excited to see what more they can pull up. But that's my my small school shout out of the week. And if I don't know if you have another one, but that's the one that gave me some excitement.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
No. Primarily what I wanted to take a look at was some of the more recent results as well as the current top 25 rankings with you and kind of see where those come mm-hmm. from. I've got a question, Steve, about two teams in particular.
Okay.
Three teams. I'm going to give you three teams, and I'm going to tell you which of these three teams you think is the best team right now.
All right. Gun.
It's going to be tough. All right.
Yeah.
So if you want to pull up your top 25, you know, we got it here.
If you're not, if you're not on the live stream right now, you don't know this, but I've been given no prep for this. Kyle's dropping his fresh zero prep right now.
If
Gary Johnson this and send Goofy, my apologies in advance.
So first is Stanford.
Mm-hmm.
Second is Maryland. And third is Arizona. Stanford is sitting at number 4 in the rankings. They're at 5-2. Arizona is number 7. They are 7-0. And Maryland is number 8 at 6-2. Prior to this week, they were sitting at number 2 overall starting up the season 6-0. I'm curious right now, if you had to take one of those teams, who do you think is the team, who do you think is the best team right now?
Overall, like at the end of the year?
Yes. However you want to answer that. I'll leave that up to you.
Today, right here, it sucks because a couple days ago, I would have told you Maryland with no question whatsoever,
right?
I would have very much been like, that's the call.
That's why I kept them in it, because they've had, because they were looking really good. They've played 3 top 10 teams in a row.
My gut to both questions of like now versus end of the year, it leans Stanford simply mm-hmm. because of what we've seen. You know, it's the classic case of, will they beat Maryland? So that seems like a natural call out there. Maryland seems to be on a bit of a bounce. That's tough. I feel hesitant to give this straight to Arizona for 2 reasons. Yes, they beat Louisville to start off the year, mm-hmm. the second game of the year. Outside of that, we've really not seen that much of a challenge. I mean, the DePaul game mm-hmm. was pretty tough, and DePaul is a tough opponent.
Yeah, DePaul's one, and then Rutgers usually has some solid players, but
it's an off year for Rutgers.
They're not good this year.
Then they had a cancellation, and so heading into this next line of games, we're not going to be seeing them again until the 9th, until they take North Dakota State, and that's, you know, hoping they remain healthy and that momentum sticks there. So I'm hesitant to call it Arizona in that sense. Right now, I'd say pound for pound, Stanford's probably the top team. Also, I think they probably still have the most consistent roster with, you know, Beliebe finding her mojo. Jones and Jump are doing really well.
Cameron Brink had a phenomenal night the other night.
Brink looked really great. You've got the whole matchup, which is always intriguing. But I think right now I probably would take the consistency of their roster, their 1 through 6, 7 against either of those teams. The thing about Maryland is it just, it almost depends on the night, because they could easily bounce back with a Miami win, probably with a Rutgers win. You know, I'm looking at that South Carolina game on the 12th, and I'm thinking you've got three games in between that if you find your mojo, I'm still not going to completely call out Maryland in that matchup. Most likely, obviously, but I think they still have the talent and the energy pace within them to make that happen. Right now, I look at you know, Stanford's lack of luck after a few games. You know, they lose to Texas early. They've got that you know, that UCF loss, but they bounce back. They beat number two Maryland. I'm not very worried about what Stanford's putting out right now. I do have some concern about can Maryland more or less respond. And I'm wondering if Arizona's as good as their record says, because I just, who have they beat outside of course, right, outside of Louisville. I don't need Stanford fan being like, what about Louisville? That was a month ago at this point. You know, we're looking forward at their next ranked matchup. You're looking at the 19th against Texas. Then, of course, you've got USC. You're starting conference play after that. So USC, UCLA, and company. But even then, you're not really looking at a high-level team. I mean, UCLA can bounce back pretty easily. But you're looking at Oregon State in January. You know, it's, they may actually be able to kind of pad things a little bit. And then we'll see once we get into the heat of conference play if they can maintain themselves. Whereas Stanford, Maryland have had a chance to test themselves outside of their conference a little bit more and show their,
agreed,
show their mettle a bit.
Arizona, I think, right now is probably, yeah, they're hurt because of their strength of schedule. That being the case, I mean, these schedules are primarily done well in advance of the season, and they're coming off a Final Four appearance. Then coming into a season 7-0 with wins against Louisville, DePaul, and Vanderbilt, you know, which Vanderbilt and DePaul aren't total slouches. But they're agreed. Like, they've had one top 10 matchup that they took care of. If they can take care of business against Texas, because I don't really see North Dakota State, New Mexico, or Northern Arizona really giving much of a fit here. I think these are going to be primarily just tune-up games.
How dare you disparage the great name of my NAU Jacks? How dare you?
I love the NAU Jacks just as much as the next person, but
dare you down talk my 1-3 Northern Arizona Lumberjacks like that?
But I think it's interesting that they just haven't had much off season, like, or preseason, I should say, out of conference play, I should say.
Their
out of conference schedule is really, really not great.
Outside of that, you lost your player who kept you one basket from a national championship. So you're looking to balance out the leadership structure of your roster, and things do look good. And the other side of it is their wins have been impressive. I mean, Louisville is a 2-point game. You know, they play the sixth best team in the nation at the time. Outside of that, your closest matchup is what, DePaul? Other than that, pretty much we're
Vanderbilt, I guess, was a 2-point game.
Oh, right? Yeah. Sorry, I looked at that again. Yeah. I mixed my dyslexia. I saw 48-68 because I mixed up the DePaul score. So Vandy was a close one. But for the most part, they've very comfortably made this happen. So they've been able to do this in short order. So it shows you that the beats are there, the talent's there. This team has, is good by all metrics. There's no questioning what they can put together on the court that way. It'll just be interesting to see once those real conference tests start to happen, are they going to look like that Arizona team we just witnessed? Or is it going to take a minute or two for them to return to that level of prominence?
I'm excited. I still think that we've got a really solid, I think the top three teams, I guess you could say, right now are looking like a solid number one seed right now. We've got South Carolina, NC State, and UConn. South Carolina sweeping all the first place votes, as they should. They look absolutely phenomenal. Aaliyah Boston, just having a phenomenal season, as well as many others. NC State is just that team, and we've mentioned this every season. NC State is the team nobody thinks about, nobody picks, and is somehow just always just, they're just consistently a top level team, and nobody gives them, nobody gives the Pack the love that they deserve.
We're something about NC State being, and it's being in that flooded ACC with teams that tend to find their way to the top when all things are said and done. NC State's one of those teams you're just a little hesitant to lean in on. It's like, is it time? If you look at and again, people hate this, so I apologize in advance. If you look at the at men's basketball history, this was Villanova about a decade ago. Is it time to finally call it? Like, can we finally say it's Villanova's chance? And they were good, and they were good, and they would be a one or two seed every year in the national tournament. And it never quite got there. And then, like, the one year they were a top seed and everyone was like, I can't do it. I can't take a risk of Phil. They run it all the way. And then they do it again. And I think NC State's one of those teams that's, they're on the cusp of making that type of noise. Louisville's another team like that. But there's something, it's interesting because Louisville, they're in the same conference. They have that same track record of being a top 10 team and making noise in the conference. But what you just said is full on, because we talk about Louisville all the time.
And nobody mentions
we
NC
hardly,
State.
We're like almost weirdly hesitant to talk about the Wolfpack. I don't know exactly what it is. I don't know if it's a flamboyance thing. I don't know if it's just their standing as a school in their conference altogether. Whereas, and what I mean by that is, ACC across all sports, right? North Carolina is a name. Duke is a name. You know, you have Miami's a name, and NC State's always kind of there. But it's really intriguing. I just wish I had an answer for you, because they're a very fun team to watch.
I think this is the first time we brought them up this season, and they're the number two team in the AP poll. Well, technically tied. I should say they're tied for number two with UConn. But UConn's only played four games. They're 3-1. They beat USF, which is, you know, actually looking more and more impressive as the season goes on.
Yeah.
USF, go Bulls all the way.
You're going to want to beat USF if you have any chance.
You're going to want to, yeah.
They're apparently one of the harder W's in this entire country.
That's a fantastic team. Their only loss was to South Carolina, which South Carolina really ran away with it in the second half. But because they're UConn, of course, they're going to stay towards the top. And they don't really have much. They've got Notre Dame coming up I think you mentioned that on Sunday, right? Mm-hmm. That's going to be on Fox Sports 1. And then after that, you know, it's a lot of while before they start hitting teams like Louisville. And then the rest of their season is pretty minimal. They don't have a ton of like big name teams that they're going to be going up against on a regular basis. So I'm interested to see what happens with UConn. Obviously, there's two pieces of news surrounding Azzie Fudd today. One, she just recently signed with the Steph Curry brand, the SC30 brand, which is huge. Going along with what we were talking about earlier with Gatorade and Paige. So she just landed that deal with Steph Curry. But then also looks like she's going to be out for the next couple of weeks with what looks like could potentially be the start to a hairline fracture in her foot, which you don't – any sports fan that's followed any sports and especially basketball for a significant amount of time, hairline fractures in the foot – end careers.
Yeah.
And so if you can see the beginning, like maybe some evidence of this, mm-hmm. I don't care how long you sit out. You sit out and get that taken care of. Yeah.
a hairline fracture in the lower extremity. It's a cracked windshield in that technically I can run on it. I can make it work for now, but a cracked windshield turns into a shattered windshield very quickly. Mm-hmm. Or like a chip in the windshield turns into a crack really quickly. Like you want that done, because it doesn't take a hard bend. It takes an angle. You know, it takes just the right pressure in the right spot. And you want to make that happen, especially as you get closer into conference play. And in UConn's case, quite honestly, tournament season, really. I feel like they're going to be able, with that roster, I don't think a team with Kristen Williams, Nelson Adota, and Miss Gatorade, Paige Beckers, is very worried about how they're going to be able to adjust. But once we start hitting tournament play and they want to, you know, find yet another deep run in them, obviously FUD's going to be a huge player. But it's that idea of they luckily can afford with their depth to wait that out pretty much as far as they need to, and they just have no reason not to. I would hate for them to have to do any redshirting in this case. I think that'd be dumb, unless this turns into a worse injury than we thought for some reason. But yeah, there are no necessary hurry to make that happen. So if we don't see her until even February, I just think that's smart. You might as well play that safely, because that's the next phase of your franchise. That's the next, you know, there's a thousand reasons why you don't want to go too heavily on that. And that injury, what you called on it is exactly that. I've seen people do, you know, have that injury, hobble off. You're going, oh, that doesn't look good. Then they come right back out and you're like, oh, maybe they're fine. And then within another couple games, the next thing you know, you don't see them for a season and a half. That's
right.
Wouldn't surprise me. So let's not do that.
Let's stay on this this UConn theme that has come up a couple times, and can we talk about Candace Parker's comments with Gino and USA Basketball? Let's chat about this, because here's the thing: if you come into women's basketball, primarily NCAA women's basketball, people really do tend to fall in one of two camps. You are either pro UConn, love UConn, or you are hate UConn through and through. And I think that the four of us land pretty squarely in the middle of that. We're not super pro UConn and we're not against UConn. We try to stay really unbiased when it comes to, this team. And so, I think that because of that unique position that we have of we're not, you know, crazy one side or the other, it's been a really interesting, like, journey to kind of look at this whole USA Basketball, Candace Parker situation from a distance, and finally getting a little bit of some commentary, a little bit more clear from Candace recently. Steve, I'm curious, what were your thoughts as far as how she broke down what her interactions were, her disappointments, and her kind of attitude toward the whole USA Basketball Gino Auriemma, you know, situation as it took place initially?
One thing I'll say on top of this, and I'm going to delicately point this out, Candace Parker is an expert level communicator. And what I mean by that is, she has a way to deliver her thoughts in a way that, it's not just eloquence for eloquence sake. So I'm not just saying, you know, it's coming in and smooth big words. She knows how to deliver a message and a story in a way that helps you truly understand what it's feeling like. Like, she can emote that really well. And it goes beyond what she's saying. Candace interviews are ones that are like, you cannot just read the quote, and never just read the quote, read the article. But with Candace, you got to read the article. You got to watch the video. You got to see the nonverbals. You got to see the facial expressions. Something I appreciated about what she pointed out. And by the way, I don't consider anything that was said as like a slam on Gino. And that's one thing, is like, I don't see this as beef necessarily of this moment, other than to say, I think this is just some, I really appreciate the honesty of it. It's just someone really being honest about the situation. It's refreshing as a sports fan who has to sit through the vapid workaround phrases all the time of what is that supposed to mean? Or that's what a publicist told you to say, to just simply have someone ask Candace Parker, tell me about what's going on with Gino Auriemma. And she says, I don't like him. He doesn't like me. We don't like each other. It's honestly refreshing to hear that, because guess what? That's life. That happens. You have people you don't get along with. And this is a different case of they've seemingly never had to necessarily work together. I think the only thing she said that may have come off as heat is to say, you know, she says, I'm of the philosophy of I can work with people I don't get along with. You know, it's that idea of like, if I don't like you, that's fine, but I can work with you. We can make a professional relationship happen. And in a way, you can construe that to say, she's saying Gino's not willing to do that, and I am. I don't know. But that's one thing that I appreciate about this is to say, like, I didn't come off of this being like she's slamming Gino and saying what a terrible guy he is. I think it's her simply saying, listen, I don't like the dude. He doesn't like me. I think you can all understand why we don't like each other. Like, these are two teams.
Yeah.
I come from the place he probably hates the very most. And he has a great
She even threw a little bit of shade saying, like, you know, he's used to having championships. She says, in my 4 years at Tennessee, they didn't get one. Yeah. You know, like,
I
appreciate that. Because she's like, history, she's like, yeah. I get why. She's like, I get it. I get why he doesn't like me. And that's fine. Like, yeah. And I appreciate the honesty behind it.
I'm not a Grant Hill guy. And I only bring this up because I think it's a similar type of conversation. I'm not a Grant Hill guy, right? But Jalen Rose made a comment about Grant Hill during the Fab Five documentary. I don't know if you remember this. And put out a statement. And I won't go into like the context of what was said, but this documentary is all about that, those Michigan Fab Five teams, right? And they make all the, you know, all this happens and all these, it's brash and it's interesting. So Jalen makes this comment naturally because he's a Michigan guy. And I think a lot of people were just like, oh, there's a slam on Grant Hill. And Grant Hill to me won that argument. Not with this long statement he gave where he talked about his frustration with that comment, but at the way he ended it, which was simply to say, like, I'm proud to be a Duke Blue Devil and I'm proud to have never lost a game to the Fab Five Michigan Wolverines. That's how he ended that statement. And in my head, I go, there's no Jalen Rose is a very well-spoken. That guy can quip. He can come back. He can decimate you. He's that type of dude. He has no comeback that beats that. Because ball don't lie. Candace Parker always has that for good. Whatever you want to do.
Right.
And Gino got the best opportunity. If everything rumored is true, by the way, we don't want to immediately assume. But if everything that Gino did is assumedly a part of this beef or whatever you want to call it, if him withholding her from Olympic teams and not helping her further her stardom that way plays any role in this, it's probably the closest anyone's come to doing this, but there's nothing he can do to make up for the fact that she nullified your team. Your and it was a very UConn deep team. It was just pre-Maya Moore, but it was a great team. And she put that to rest and dominated the game. You can't say no to that. I understand why it would be difficult to do business in that case. It would just be tough. And
for sure.
But to make it clear as well, these were US teams that went to gold medal consideration pretty much immediately without question. If for some reason it's a much more competitive field of Olympic teams, this is the question I would have for Gino. If women's basketball in the Olympics is much more competitive, and there's other nations that have a talent roster that matches up to the US, you know, and all of that conversation is happening. Then at that point, can you justify leaving Candace Parker off of your roster? It's one thing but it's one thing when you can move Candace Parker away, but you have Sylvia Fowles and Elena Deladon and Brittany Griner and the list goes on and on and on. But if that shifts a little bit and the talent level is if more teams, instead of one team having 12 all-stars and other teams have 1 to 2, if a handful of teams have 6 and you have 6, at that point, can you give me any justification for leaving her off? And that's where I think this is interesting, because there is a small part of me that says, Gino's a sly dude. Maybe he could talk his way out of that. And that's what's interesting to me is that I'm not saying he would, but I wouldn't put it past him. And that's what makes this interesting to me.
Right. I found this really interesting. I looked it up from the year 2000 to 2004, Connecticut won 4 out of 5 championships. Candace Parker started in the fall of 2004. So the 2005 championship. At Tennessee, Baylor won in 2005, Maryland won in 2006, and then Tennessee went back to back in 07-08. As soon as Candace Parker's out of the picture, Connecticut goes back-to-back seasons undefeated, 39-0, winning the title. So if I'm Candace, of course I'm bringing that up in this interview. So some people that were like, oh, she didn't, you know, like she's the one bringing up the heat. If I'm Candace, sure. Yeah. Kind of like what you said about the Grant Hill comment. Now, here's the thing. I think that a lot of people have found their, you know, I think Candace Parker is a little bit of a polarizing figure. And I think Connecticut or UConn women's basketball is also a polarizing figure. Most people will find themselves on one or the other side of that. We've got a whole slew of, like South Carolina and Stanford fans here listening that are like, what, who cares? You know, but at this point, yeah. You know, for a huge portion of women's basketball history, these have been two really polarizing figures. And so it's kind of fun to be in between these, you know, in between these two and be, you know, not really being a super, you know, not siding with one way or the other and being able to just hear commentary from it. And so, and I understand why she's like, listen, you're expected to just, I think what she brought up about the women's game, how they were expected to drop everything and go to every single mini camp, every single little off, you know, little game here and there. Whereas on the men's side of things, you weren't seeing that from Kobe. You weren't seeing that from LeBron. In fact, the USA men's basketball team currently doesn't even hold most like all-stars. Like they're like the USA men's basketball team is most of the big names don't go. And so, you know, she's kind of bringing this point up. Like we were expected to drop it at the drop of a hat, go do everything. And she's like, and I was out there scoring, you know, near triple doubles and, mm-hmm. and performing well. And then to go through all that and then not be able to go and have an opportunity to represent my country and get a gold medal. Like it's a guaranteed gold medal at this point. And she's like, for me to do all of that and then get cut it boiled down to she felt like her time away from her daughter was not worth it.
Yeah.
And I can see where that bitterness could come from. And I can see why Gino's like, listen, I don't want to work with her.
Yeah.
I get both sides of it. And so it was fun to hear.
Yeah,
and I'm glad we had a chance to talk about it.
W History Chronicle of 2008 with Candace, we also talk about the fact that Candace randomly saw heavily reduced minutes on Team USA for seemingly no reason. Like, there's really not a strong case for why all of a sudden is she pulling in single digit minutes with this squad. Right. And it was really intriguing to fly, you know, to go through the, you know, her relationship was far beyond just 2016 to now. There were a lot of frustrations even then when she was seemingly the face of the league, the face of the game, and still not seemingly pulling in that respect. And I mean, if you flipped this in modern day, if Dawn Staley keeps Brianna Stewart off of the Olympic team, and there's a place, I'm not, and I disagree with what I'm literally about to say, but there's a place to make that argument in she has an injury past. Maybe we don't want to take that risk. We have another group of talented bigs, so we're going to go with somebody else. Yeah. But like that could happen.
But there's just not that.
but it's that idea of like, is UConn fan going to take other fans saying quit whining? Well, no. Absolutely not. That, like, I'm not a UConn fan, and that would piss me off, because it's that idea. You easily can make that summarization of, like, oh, is Dawn Staley throwing shade at UConn? Is she throwing shade at Stewie? Like, it's that idea of, like, if that were to happen, would that happen? If, you know, it's hard because it's difficult to make that. But, like, if Cheryl Reeve did this to, you know, she's the other coach who probably is in that same, public discussion with Candace and NECA mm-hmm. because of her being the Lynx coach and they played for the Sparks for so long. If that happens with, like, Cheryl, do we see it as the same discussion? And I think one of the biggest differences is you palpably see the impact that Candace Parker alone made against an entire UConn organization, because we're not just talking about a player who kept a team from winning championship for 4 years. Also, two of the most iconic and statement-making dunks, if you want to have the dunk conversation, in the history of the women's side of basketball, Candace did on a UConn court. It's one of those things of like, this is so much more than just like, oh,
there's a lot of layers to this. Yeah.
And that bugs me because it's clearly like, I wanted to beat her so bad. Like you see where all of that festers in real time. And here's the thing.
Yeah.
I don't think Candace said anything that means like there's new beef to stir up. I think she's just very upfront and saying we're obviously two people who don't like each other. That's okay. That's going to happen. These two people do not like each other. We all have, you know, I have in-laws I don't get along with. I'm willing to say not my best friends. If their car breaks down, I'll happily come help them. That's family. If he wants to work with me, we'll talk about it. But I don't like him and he doesn't like me. I don't think that's necessarily generally stirring up beef, but I'll say this. Well-paced, well-cooked, not overdone beef is good for the growth of a sport. It actually can be good because it's something that shows this is how invested these two people are in this game. This is how much it matters to them. If basketball as a whole is taken out of the equation, there's no passion here. And while over-publicizing and over-hyping beef to turn the sport into a soap opera like the NBA likes to do, like the MNBA likes to do, that's one side of it. But this is a case where I go, I actually love this because it's making people have real conversations about this league. And naturally, that popularity is there. So I like it. And I don't think it's a huge sting thing. And it's just a great video. It's one of the best 5-minute interview clips I've seen from an athlete in a good while. It's like I said, master communicator. I've watched that video just like on my feed with no audio on, just her facial expressions. And you're just like, you can sense everything that she's saying. She's so good at relaying that. It's why she's the human that can handle Shaq on live television on TNT. She has the ability to.
She handles Shaq better than anyone.
My favorite quote from that interview wasn't even the Gina one. It was her talking about Shaq. When she was like, he's talking and I'm looking at D Wade and we both are like, do you want to engage right now? That line killed me. Like, you want to engage right now? I just love that. You know, it's that classic fearlessness. And I just, it's such a, that whole interview is great.
We're just about out of time here, Steve, but this has been, it's been fun to just talk basketball. I feel like we didn't really have any like major topics, but we kind of just went, you know, we started in with college basketball, ending with that Parker interview. I've loved being back on, Mike. I think this is going to be a fun episode to go back and listen to.
Absolutely,
we've got plenty more to talk about, by the way.
So much,
and I'm excited to hop back on, Mike. I want to here in the next episode or two. I want to make sure we talk about some of the things like the Atlanta Dream. There's so much that could be coming down the pipeline for the Atlanta Dream this offseason. I'm really, really excited to talk about what could be happening with them. Everything from, you know, GM, new coach, three players not returning, like, and three big time, like big name players not returning to their, like, this could be an opportunity for Atlanta to have a complete rebrand. And I'm not talking like logos. I'm talking identity as a team. And I think that would be a fun discussion to have. We potentially, hopefully have some lottery discussions coming up, and WNBA draft news coming down the pipeline. Cross your fingers. But overall, we've got a ton coming up. Free agency the off season free agency, is going to be here before we realize it, as well as plenty of other NCAA women's basketball discussions as that continues on. Make sure, as you're listening to this, make sure that you are ready to watch all of the big games going on tonight, December 2nd, as you're listening to this, as well as the others that are coming this weekend. Plenty of NCAA basketball to be watching. Steve, before we sign off, do you want to let everybody know the best way that they can get in contact with us and how they can interact with us on a regular basis?
Absolutely. Head over to Twitter at WNBA Nation Pod. You can head over likewise on Facebook. Of course, if you're listening to this on the pod feed, but you want the live experience, check us out at the Twitch. We generally live stream twice a week. We try to do it, you know, a little more, a little less here and there, but stay on top of Twitter, especially because that's where we'll find that. Our store envy page can hook you up with some great merch. Of course, you can listen to the show anywhere your podcast can be found. If you listen anywhere that has a rating system, especially over on Apple Podcasts, give us that 5-star review. That helps us out huge. We'd love to hear a comment. What do you love about the show? What more do you want to see out of the show? Absolutely, positively. So definitely stay connected by all of those means. If you are live on the Twitch as well, and you want to help give a little extra investment to the show, we would love a subscription, which you can do by your own merit, or you can do through an Amazon, Wish. Prime. How did I forget that? Amazon Prime allows you one free Twitch subscription a month. Every month, if you renew that, that actually gives us some kickback. And all you had to do was click a button. Didn't even have to give us any actual of your own money. So that would be a huge plus for us on that end, big time support. And also, I'm just going to say it. You can edit this out, Jason, if you want to. But hey, tickets just went out for the Final Four in Minneapolis. If you're looking to get that going, if you're looking to make that trip, be on the lookout because we're going to be there.
We're going.
I'm just saying.
We're going.
I'm that excited. We're going to be there.
We are. I'm actually buying tickets.
Yeah. We shall wash in all 10,000 lakes. and we will juice up them Lucy's. We are going to be there in Minneapolis. I'm so excited to check. This is my first Final Four. It's like a dream.
Me too.
I can't wait. It's going to be fun. Yeah,
and I'm really excited.
Yo.
We've got tickets. We're planning on being there. So if you're wanting to be there and you want to sync up and hang out sometime, let us know. We will be in the area. Keep us posted. And we'll hopefully see all of you and some big action at the Final Four in Minnesota.
This is already showing up to be a huge season, and I think it's going to finish off extremely well. A lot to be excited about. I think we have a good couple of months ahead of us. I'm hoping to get some W history stuff up and off the ground before too long. Probably not until the turnaround of the year, but we'll see how that goes. But we're always looking to source some awesome content. It's a good time to be a fan of the show.
Absolutely. Well, we will be back with you here shortly with plenty more to discuss, but that's all the time we've got for today. For WNBA Nation, I'm Kyle Haywood.
I'm Steve Schwarzman.
And we got you next time.